You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 19 April. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Nick Kuntz, week ahead for markets. I want to touch. Gold is moving, gold stocks are not. Opportunity there. And then Cartrack returns as Karoo on Wednesday. Chatting with Spot Money CEO on the benefits of their new shared accounts. I want to just dig around Spot Money. What's the story with that? They're not a bank, they're an app. And then Andrew Bradley from Fiscal. Implications for broken social contract. We've certainly seen that start to collapse. Does that have investment implications and the like going forward? Our poll from Friday, we were speaking to Viv Govender about the Rand. We asked you, it was 14.20, how much stronger can it go in the years ahead? The answers back on both on Twitter and LinkedIn, 23%, maybe a little stronger, 21%, potentially much stronger, that's where I sat, 35%, no, it won't last, and 21% of you, who I think actually probably the correct folks, said impossible to forecast. MoneyWeb Now, brought to you by Orbvest, a global real estate company that has a hyper-focus on acquiring stable income-producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low-risk commercial real estate, primarily in the healthcare niche in the USA, from as little as $5,000. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Bell Equipment buyout of minorities and delisting still on the cards. It's going to be a couple of months away, and I think it's going to be quite diverse. I think people are not going to be happy. Business Day, as I said, Karoo set for inward listing on the JSE. It's Karoo with, I think it's five zeros. It's trading about $33 on the NASDAQ. Morning markets, US is green, S&P up 0.4 and NASDAQ up 0.1 on Friday. This morning in Asia, Sydney up 0.3, Tokyo up 0.1. Commodities mixed, but gold 17.78, Rand 14.28. Top 40 opening, it's modest up, about 35 points higher. What's that, about 0.04%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nick Kuntz, Portfolio Manager, Sunlam Private Wealth. Nick, morning. Appreciate your early Monday morning time. I mentioned gold in the intro there. Gold is certainly looking a little bit stronger. It had been weak for much of this year and late last. Suddenly moving again. Gold stocks are not moving. Is there opportunity? Is this something that you're looking at? Or has gold kind of served its purpose last year and with respect to the metal we've moved on?
Morning, Simon. No, I don't think it has served its purpose. I think it's, you know, we've had a lot of bit of end of last year, a little bit of volatility coming in, gold sort of sliding off its highs we saw during the year. And I think this morning, interesting enough, it seems to be like a little bit of red on the screen, a little bit of sort of risk off feel. I see Indian markets down about, Sensex down about 3% this morning, COVID cases increasing, you know, against that sort of backdrop and, you know, heading into US earnings season, you know, having a little bit of gold in the portfolio now, where it hasn't played that sort of safe haven status the last couple of weeks, at these levels, I think it's quite interesting. And looking at, gold shares need to play a little bit of catch up, I think.
Yeah, some opportunity there, perhaps, as you say, that they kind of lagged a little bit in that sense. I also mentioned Cartrack in my intro. It was a complex deal. Essentially, Cartrack becomes Karoo with many zeros, lists on NASDAQ. That stock hit $90 at one point. If I do the math, it's trading at about 47 Rand, sort of back from the NASDAQ into the JSE, because it's a 10-for-1 holding. Is this a stock that you were involved in? Have you looked at valuations? Is it attractive?
We are personally, as Sunlam Private Wealth, not involved in it, but I do have a few clients that hold the share and are quite knowledgeable on it. It was, as you said, very complicated deal with what they were doing on the NASDAQ. But if you actually look, strip out all the sort of complications of the listings and all the fun and games there, I mean, revenue up almost, I think, 17-18%. Mm-hmm. I mean, profit after tax, 20%. I mean, this is a business that's grown year after year after year. And I remember seeing a headline number a few months ago, hitting sort of over a million subscribers in the US. So certainly doing something right. Whether or not there's an opportunity at these levels, I'm not sure. It's, as you said, very complicated structure. But overall, as a business, It's one of these high growth projections. I think it's definitely worth a look.
Yeah, and as you point out, I mean, it is a proper global business. It might be South African born, but global. A quick last question. Local inflation Wednesday, CPI, likely to pick up a bit more than anything base effect. My expectation, probably not market moving, or do you think this could have some sort of impact?
No, I mean, I'm firmly in the camp. I think inflation's coming. But if you look at what Mr. Kaniagi and certainly other central bankers, they are sort of fervently, we don't care about inflation for now. You know, we're quite happy to let it run hot regardless for the foreseeable future. When you saw the yield curve in the States from 185 all the way down to 155 with the back of Jay Powell, once again insisting we were years away from raising rates. I think our SARB's in the same camp. I think they would probably like inflation to run a little bit hot. But, I mean, the Rand's doing them a favor at the moment. We're not we're not importing as much as we're exporting it for the first time in decades. So I don't think it's going to be a market move.
Yeah, and we're at the bottom of the range. I mean, that range is 3 to 6%. Even if we move to the 4s, 4.5, that's mid-range. It's not going to – this is not the 90s again.
No, it's not. I mean, look, I do think if you look at we had a record year in crops last year. You know, I actually think the soft commodity space is one to keep an eye on if you want to see where that inflation is seeping into the sort of food basket. But they're normally sort of, 12 months, 18 months delay with inflation numbers. So I don't think we're there just yet. But as I said, I am in the camp. I do think inflation is coming at some point. But central banks are quite happy to sit on their hands for now.
Yep, agreed. I think it is coming, but central bankers are certainly comfortable with some inflation. Nikons portfolio manager, Sanlam Private Wealth, appreciate your early morning.
You've worked hard to accumulate wealth. But with these uncertain times, how can you preserve and grow your wealth in a safer place?
Offshore.
While earning regular quarterly dividends in US dollars. The solution is here. Hundreds of investors from across South Africa are investing in specialized medical real estate in the USA, sourced by a highly skilled team who make it easy for you. Orbvest SA, an authorized FSP.
Visit orbvest.com.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Jelena with Andre Hugo. He is CEO of Spot Money. Andre, morning. Appreciate your early morning time. We want to talk around your new shared accounts, which really appeal to me. Before we do, a lot of my listeners are going to be saying, Spot Money, what's this? You are an app. You're a money management app, but you're not a bank. I downloaded you over the weekend, installed it onto my phone. Essentially, I can transact and the like, but you're not a traditional bank. I sort of plug my existing bank accounts into the app. Is that a fair description?
That's correct. Yeah, we positioned ourselves as a super app, so three pillars. Anything you want to do with payments, so scanning QR codes, e-commerce, peer-to-peer payments. Mm-hmm. And then in the middle of the app, we've got digital banking capabilities around depositing your salary, EFTing people, moving money, cashbacks. And then on the third element is really the marketplace, where you can apply for loans, insurance products and other digital products that we're launching.
And one of the things I did notice, which we haven't really had in South Africa, and I know there's Vimeo in the US, and there's another, and its name currently escapes me. I think it's the one with all the emojis, where I can also do fairly simple payments to friends. A bunch of us go out for dinner, someone picks up the bill, I owe them for my pizza and beer. Getting that money to them in the past has been truthfully complex, unless I do old-fashioned cash at an ATM. I can do those sort of quick payments in between friends and the like, and that seems to be a big part of what the app's going to be.
Correct. So we really try to make money social. I mean, you work hard every day, and yet nobody really speaks about money, or when you come to pay the bill, it's kind of an awkward silence and an awkward experience. And also, from a security perspective, you don't want to hand people either cash or your bank details to pay them. Mm-hmm. So for us, we've made it really simple in terms of just as long as you've got their contacts in your cell phone, you can pay them peer-to-peer, you can request pay, or more importantly now, you can actually set up a shared account with them.
Yeah, so that shared account is really attractive. And I mean, you know, I remember in the 70s and 80s, my parents had a joint current account. And that, I mean, that ages me and my parents. And, you know, decade or so ago, my wife and I tried to set one up, and the banks just laughed at us. And they're like, we don't do that no more. What you're essentially doing is something where it could be a couple, it could be some friends, it could be me and a bunch of buddies going away for the long weekend, and we want to sort of pool all of the expenses in one place. In other words, keep track of who spent on what, where did the money go, and make this process, what is typically a massive headache, into something quite simple.
Correct. And I mean, you hit the money on the head there in terms of, you know, using it for shared weekends, people living in shared accommodation, book clubs, wine clubs, and also the class parents that have to gather money for inevitable events that happen at school. It's really simple. I have an account, you have an account on Spark, and we elect to share one wallet or one account, and you put money in, I put money in, and it's full transparency. I can see what you spend, you see what I spend, and we agree on what's happening in that account.
So, I mean, as an example, I mean, you know, we're going on a weekend, we each put a couple of hundred rand in for the weekend, and then I might have paid for the accommodation, which is more than my quota, but that'll then just pull from the other individuals and take the money out.
Correct. And then you look at the account and you say, okay, well, we all originally agreed to put in 500 rand.
Mm-hmm.
You put the 500 rand in, and when you spend from that account, so as long as you've all put it in equally, then you can actually continue to transact. If you spend or put in more, you ask other people to put in an additional amount and they simply top it up.
Okay, I like this. I think this is absolutely, I think it's going to solve 100 problems for a bunch of folks, as you say. I think in the blurb you talked around herding cats, and I think that's absolutely a correct place. You mentioned your marketplace, which you're going to be bringing loans and insurance. Will this again be, I mean, this, as I understand, this is not Spot Money he's going to be doing it. You're essentially acting as a facilitator.
Correct. So we've gone with a multi-bank strategy. We said, if you look at South Africans, particularly in the 18 to 40-year-olds, they've got multiple accounts.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, why be banked with one institution for the, you know, your rest of your life? You know, when I started banking, my parents had a bank account. They recommended it to me. Uh-huh. I got a check account. Uh-huh. I then got a credit card. I then got a home loan. And I was locked into that institution. What we're looking at is saying, well, it might not be in your best interest. If you want a loan from Capitec or you need insurance from OutSurance, we can facilitate that through the app and actually get you the best of all worlds, because you don't have to shop around for it. We shop around for it and present it to you. And only when you decide to engage with those brands do you actually send them any of your data to engage with. So it's also from a privacy and security perspective.
It's sort of like an aggregator. We saw this in the home loan market springing up in the early 2000s, where they would take your data, send it to a bunch of different companies, and come back and say, here's the availability. It's something similar to that.
Yeah, the only difference to that is we don't actually send your data at all.
Yeah.
Keep it within the walled garden. Mm-hmm. When you decide to engage with a brand, you consent to send in a bit of your data to get some value in exchange. And that's really the whole premise that we've built it on, is you're in control of your data. You shouldn't be getting these pesky SMSs and phone calls from unsolicited numbers on a daily basis. When you want to engage with financial institutions, you push your data out to them and they come back to you.
I'm getting those pesky phone calls from an insurer who I spoke to in 2019. You would think statute of limitations would have expired by now. I like this. The shared account sounds like a really grand idea. Andre Hugo, CEO of Spot Money, appreciate your early morning, sir.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Andrew Bradley, CEO of Fiscal. He put out a great note last week on the implications of a broken social contract that is existing. And this is my thought was he's talking South Africa. He's not. He's talking absolutely global. Andrew, you're talking around this breakdown between citizens and their governments, and how, you know, the expectation, you know, my parents, my grandparents, there was always a strong expectation that the children would get a much better lifestyle and the like, and that is, amongst many things, one of those things that is starting to break down, the gap between the haves and the have-nots starting to widen, in a sense reversing the gains made in the previous century.
Well, I think the very essence of life in everything that we do is the expectation that things will get better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, over many decades, that's exactly what has happened. standard of living and quality of life has improved. And there are a number of reasons for that. Economic growth has happened. And the essence of our social contracts with governments is that they will take care of us, and mm-hmm. in return, we will pay taxes. And that's the way societies have been built. You know, in sort of communistic countries where the intention has been that everyone's been equal, had that intention as well, but for various reasons, it didn't quite work out that way because they didn't have the economic growth that they were anticipating. The problem that we have now is that for our governments to be able to provide those services, and we're seeing that in many countries around the world, they're not getting the tax income that they're getting to be able to provide those services. So people are starting to see cutbacks in terms of the services that governments are providing. Mm-hmm. So they should be providing policing, education, healthcare, and many of those are starting to fall by the wayside, which has seen standards of living and quality of life dropping. Or alternatively, for those that can afford it, they've been able to put those services in place for themselves. But those who can't have been getting progressively, seen their standard of living dropping sort of commensurately with that.
And I mean, the point is, I mean, when you talk around this, you think, oh, the Venezuelans and the Zimbabweans of the world, and that's true. I mean, it absolutely is. But it's the UK and the US's as well. And I mean, I've seen this before. There was a report out a week or two ago that, sort of some of the biggest companies on the NASDAQ, the Amazons and the like, they pay zero federal tax. In other words, they're in those communities. They're, in some cases, putting businesses in those communities under pressure or out of business, but they're not giving back to that community.
Yeah. So, I mean, what one, as you correctly say, thinks of it as a third world problem. Mm. But the reality is, if you just take the UK as a fantastic example of it, they've seen those standards dropping quite substantially because their tax base has been eroded. So, if you take South Africa as well, the prevalence of some of the global companies, and I think when President Biden came into power in the US, one of the things he said was that, 90 of the sort of Fortune 500, the top 500 companies, in essence, in the world, 90 of them don't pay any taxes at all, not a cent.
Yeah.
And so from that perspective, how do companies or how do countries now start providing the services they have in terms of that social contract? So, when you also then take in the UK, as I said, a company like Amazon coming in, and particularly in lockdown, it's taken away the services of other well-established, stable companies that are providing services to those communities who are taxpayers, who then create the full circle in terms of uplifting standard livings. The rag's been pulled out from under them by the likes of Amazon's coming in, and Amazon is just one example. I mean, you take Google, what it's done as well in providing a different, completely different service, phenomenal service, but in those countries where they're providing the services, taking away the other standard services that are provided by taxpaying companies. So, you saw in Australia trying to now make Google pay for some of the information that they're getting and content for their platform. You're now trying to get other companies, countries in Europe, going to the large tech companies and saying, well, hang on, Facebook, you're earning all your income from our citizens, but you're giving back nothing to the tax base. So these dynamics are very, very fluid. It was inconceivable a month or two ago to even think that there'd be a global tax rate agreed by countries.
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden they're saying, hang on, we need to sort this out. So the problem and the challenges here, I think, are relatively easy to identify. How they're going to be resolved is you know, very, very complex and very difficult, because they're going to have to fundamental changes to the way things currently are, and the implications and consequences of those are difficult to contemplate.
Yeah, Janet Yellen's proposal, great idea. A quick last question. Mm-hmm. This obviously, there's implications. I mean, implications for our savings and our investments. I mean, this is going to have challenges. One of those is that in many cases we might have to be paying for our security, education, healthcare, etc. This is real world implications going forward.
Most definitely. I mean, from a South African context, we're really seeing that with private healthcare, private education, private security. So all of those things, you know, for various different reasons, have already starting to evolve. But if you look at companies that provide these services, that are potential investment mm-hmm. opportunities for us, you know, it's almost, you know, what I call sort of a horse and buggy cart versus car. So, you know, if you in 1900 invested in the best horse and buggy cart maker in the world, saying, well, you know, this is going to be a great investment for the future, it, you know, was an absolute disaster, because something called the motor vehicle came yeah. along, and, you know, even the best horse and buggy cart maker, you know, hardly exists today. So in these inflection points, they're going to be significant winners and significant losers. So, I mean, just like there was with the pandemic, you know, those companies that could operate virtually did phenomenally well, and those that couldn't were a disaster. So with all these changes of tax bases, new social contracts, new services, they're going to be a significant shifting of the sands, and we have to keep our wits about us.
Yeah, and some of those winners and losers will be countries, there'll be entire economies. We'll leave it there. Andrew Bradley, CEO of Fisco, appreciate your time again this morning. The show is brought to you by Orbvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 32, a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Jacksonville, Florida. For more information, visit orbvest.com. Orbvest SA, authorized financial service provider, license number 50483. Our poll this morning, Nick Kunst is saying, yeah, gold's moving and those miners should come, and he thinks there's still a space for gold. I thought maybe gold's day in the sun was last year, but the question is, gold is moving, miners are not. Is there opportunity here? Options are yes, they'll run, not convinced, we'll wait and see. And you can answer that both on our LinkedIn profile as well as our Twitter account. That's it for today. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and app at 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7 a.m. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Cordora, Nicole, Matapelo, to you for listening, my guests for the early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.